This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. The U.S. State Department says foreign ministers from several countries are meeting virtually Monday to discuss their next steps in Afghanistan as the airlift evacuation of the country enters in the final days. The United States will host the meeting. The summit comes on the day before the deadline for U.S. military forces to finish their withdrawal from Afghanistan after 20 years of war. It's slightly more than 2 weeks after the Taliban swept back into power across the country, culminating with the takeover of Kabul. The meeting will come a day after the United States said it destroyed an explosives-laden vehicle with an airstrike in Kabul. And it's 2 days after President Joe Biden warned of another terror attack in the capital following a suicide bombing on Thursday. The Thursday attack killed more than 100 people, including 13 U.S. service members. President and First Lady went to Dover Air Force Base on Sunday to meet the families of the service personnel and receive the remains brought back from Afghanistan. President Joe Biden and First Lady Joe Biden met with the families of the 13 service members. The 13 U.S. service members were aged between 20 and 31 years old. Five of them were just 20 years old. The families met with the president at Dover. The deadly attack last week took place as thousands were gathered outside the airport trying to leave Afghanistan following the Taliban takeover in the country. And the 13 U.S. service members were aged between 20 and 31, five of them just 20 years old. The deadly attack last week took place as thousands were gathered outside the airport. This is VOA News. The U.S. National Hurricane Center said late Sunday that Hurricane Ida has weakened to a Category 3 storm. It's now centered west of New Orleans. The storm is still packing maximum sustained winds of 200 kilometers per hour. It's now expected to pass the city to the west. CNN has reported that about 700,000 households and businesses were without power at the wake of the storm, including all of New Orleans. Hurricane Ida was a dangerous Category 4 storm when it made landfall in coastal Louisiana earlier Sunday. Wind speeds were up to 240 kilometers. Speaking on U.S. television Sunday, U.S. President Joe Biden warned that the devastation from the storm is likely to be immense, adding that we should not kid ourselves. The president said that he has already signed an emergency declaration for the states of Louisiana and Mississippi. He said the federal government would help the region get back on its feet as soon as possible. He also urged people in the storm-affected regions to look out for the neighbors. Ahead of Ida's arrival, Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards said 5,000 National Guard troops were standing by along the coast for search and rescue efforts. Sunday is also the anniversary of the devastating landfall of Hurricane Katrina in 2005. A Category 3 storm damaged the New Orleans levee system and flooded the city. Some 1,800 people are believed to have died as a result of that storm. Zambia's new finance minister said in an interview aired on Sunday that it was critical to agree to a lending program with the IMF because it would give creditors confidence in the government cheaper and longer financing. The minister was appointed Friday by recently elected president. He faces the task of trying to pull the Southern African country out of debt crisis and has pledged to prioritize talks with the IMF. A Yemeni military spokesman says a missile and drone attack on a key military base in Yemen's south on Sunday killed at least 30 troops and wounded 65 others. It was one of the deadliest attacks in the country's civil war in recent years. Yemeni officials said at least three explosions took place at the air base, which is held by the internationally recognized government. No one immediately claimed responsibility for that attack. Yemen has been embroiled in a civil war since 2014, when Houthi rebels swept across much of the north and seized the capital, forcing the internationally recognized government into exile. The Saudi-led coalition entered the war the following year on the side of the government. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbati in Washington. Today is Monday, August 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's president will open the country's long-delayed parliament today, Monday, amid rumors of a planned nationwide protest.
The president will be addressing the nation from the parliament and give the policy document for the parliamentarian to start to debate on. There's no demonstration whatsoever in the country.
Kenya's University Academic Staff Union goes on strike today, Monday. Gambia's Truth Commission chief will seek the presidency in December's election. And Liberia's Alexander Kamis wants to unseat President George Weah, denying rumors there is infighting in the opposition.
We will compete for the leadership of the CPP because it's in the interest of our country, I believe, to do so. And we will not let the propaganda affect our focus in our determination.
And Kenya is stepping up its COVID-19 vaccination campaign. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan President Salva Kiir will open the country's long-delayed parliament today, Monday, in the capital, Juba. According to presidential spokesperson Atain Wek Atain, he says the opening of parliament means that the political part of implementing the country's revitalized peace agreement would come to fruition, especially on the national level. Today's expected opening of parliament comes as a coalition of civil society groups calling themselves the People's Coalition for Civil Action have called for a mass nationwide protest to demand the resignation of President Salva Kiir and his first deputy, Riek Machar. The U.S. Embassy in Juba issued an alert on Saturday calling on Americans to exercise caution and avoid the areas of demonstration. However, presidential spokesperson Wek Atain says there will be no protest today because the so-called organizers of the protest have no permission from the police.
There's no any group that has requested, you know, from the security to peacefully demonstrate. So the police have not received any request. And so there are no demonstrations scheduled for Monday. This is just the Ethiopian call on social media, and it has no ground at all.
According to the report here, what they want to do is to call for President Salva Kiir and his deputy to step down.
The problem is that there is no group that can call President Kiir to step down. This is an Ethiopian kind of organizations that is not found anywhere. How can non-existing organization be calling for the president to step aside? There's nothing, James Barton. I'm talking from Juba, and I'm telling you the truth.
Is it true that the U.S. Embassy in Juba put out an alert warning people to keep a low profile during protests that are planned for Monday?
No. There is no anybody asked to take a low profile. There are no planned demonstrations. On Monday, the president is opening the parliament. This is what is known. And everybody has set the mind for the opening of the parliament. The president will be addressing the nation from the parliament and give the policy document for the parliamentarian to start to debate on. There's no demonstration whatsoever in the country.
Talking about the president opening the parliament, what does this mean in terms of the overall movement towards achieving peace?
What it means, you know, is that the political part of the revitalized peace agreement would come to full implementation comes Monday. What remains to be seen is the gradation of the forces, which will graduate the security forces. And that means, you know, the implementation of the peace of revitalized peace agreement or resolution of conflict is going as planned, though there are some challenges that are facing the revitalized transitional national unity government from here and there. But they are going there because there's no other alternative.
Back to the planned protest. You said there's nothing or no group that is planning to protest. Is it because your government did not allow the people who are planning to have the protest?
The Bill of Rights on the Article 24 and Article 25 of the Transitional National Constitution 2011 gives people right to express their opinion freely and to also associate with others. They can go for peaceful demonstration, provided they give the police the reason why they have to demonstrate peacefully, and the police has to approve it, the way it is done in Western world, because nobody can just come out from his house and start demonstrating anywhere. In America, in Britain, these are the most established democracies. But people don't associate without informing the security operators. So, you know, what is called so-called planned demonstration was just in a document written by four individuals who actually thought by writing such document everybody will be going out to join the demonstration. First of all, there's no leadership for such kind of a grouping. There's no permission from the police for them to demonstrate peacefully. So it is non-existent.
Mr. Wekateng, we do thank you very much again. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, my dear. Thank you. Thank you.
Ateng Wekateng is spokesperson for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He was speaking with us from the capital, Juba. Kenya's University Academic Staff Union will officially go on strike today, Monday, after issuing a 7-day strike notice that expired last Friday. The lecturers said the government has failed to fully implement the 2017-2021 Collective Bargaining Agreement, also known as the CBA. As Maureen Odhiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, first-year university students who are supposed to start classes this week will be the most affected.
Normalcy in Kenya's public universities will remain paralyzed from today, Monday, after a 7-day strike notice issued by lecturers and staff unions expired. The Kenya University Academic Staff Union reached an agreement to down their tools after the government failed to fully implement the 2017-2021 collective bargaining agreement. The union secretary general, Constantine Masonga, said that the agreement has not been fully executed by some universities across the country.
IPCCF and the government are in contempt of court. On 15th January 2021, the Employment and Labor Relations Court ruled that the 2017-2021 CBA be implemented as was negotiated. Today, I want to say that IPCCF has not implemented the CBA as per the Employment and Labor Relations Court judgment. And we expect all dons to down their tools. The National Executive Committee have resoundingly voted and declared that dons are not going to be slaves anymore.
The government of Kenya last year released $66 million for the workers, and the money was to be paid in arrears. Mr. Wasonga says there will be no learning in public universities that have not paid their workers fully, despite universities having their September intakes.
I want to commission the chapter secretaries, and they are all here, powerful men. Go and mobilize our members to come out and demand what is rightfully theirs. We negotiated. They took us to court. We defeated them. What do we negotiate again?
Solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
University programs have just resumed, and a strike will be a big blow to students who lost significant learning time last year when all educational institutions closed down due to COVID-19 pandemic. Grace Nyongesa, chairperson Kenya University Academic Staff Union, says university heads have ignored the university workers and that they will not work till their plea is heard.
The vice chancellors of the university, who know what they should do, have deliberately ignored and failed to execute their mandate in regard to what they should do. We will continue to press for the rights of the dons in this country. We are the ones who are training the technocrats of this country. We cannot be ignored. We cannot continue being treated with a lot of contempt.
Less than 8 universities have complied with the court directive to pay their workers, as others remained adamant. Despite the court orders to have the workers' strike stopped, the union says normalcy will be disrupted in all universities that have not yet paid the union workers. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Odhiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
In the Gambia, the lead counsel for the country's Truth Commission has announced his candidacy for the December 4th presidential election. Issa Fall made the announcement over the weekend after accusing the Adama Barrow government of failing to meet the wishes and aspirations of the Gambian people. As Pandere Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, Fall says he will run as an independent candidate.
Having served as Gambia's Truth Commission lead counsel, SFL now wants to be elected president of the Gambia.
Our generation is being called to step on the plate and stop the abdication. We are being called to come and save our country and to stop giving our back to it. And that is why I am running for president.
Fall spoke on Friday at an event where he formally announced his quest for the presidency. He says Barrow's government hasn't delivered the wishes and the expectations of the Gambian people.
Unfortunately, the promise of 2017 turned out to be a false dawn, sadly. We are still faced with serious challenges. It is time to confront these problems head on and choose the right leadership to turn around this country.
The former International Criminal Court prosecutor is running as an independent candidate. This followed calls made by his supporters for him to take part in the coming elections. The TRRC is yet to submit its final report to President Barrow. Whether Barrow is going to implement the recommendations of the TRRC report, Fall says if elected, he would implement the report to the letter.
For 22 years, from 1994 to 2017, Gambians suffered. There are too many victims. I would make it a crusade to ensure justice for the victims.
Fall says if elected into office, he is going to set up a cabinet that would be 50% women. He has also vowed to tackle corruption. Usman Rambo Jata is the deputy leader of the former ruling APRC party. He has accused Fall of being a political adventurist.
When the TRRC was halfway, I made an audio, and I was informing the government that this guy is looking for political prominence. He's going to vie for the presidency. But people by that time, they didn't take me seriously. But now, thanks to Allah, I'm being vindicated.
Suleiman Jeng, a Barrow supporter, told VOA that Fall's candidature is going to compromise the impartiality of the TRRC.
It jeopardizes the report and the findings because a lot of Gambians are running to the bank saying that his sole interest of coming into the TRRC was to project himself, because prior to the TRRC, nobody knew who Esa Fall is.
Fall disagrees. He says he has finished his TRRC work with a sound record. He also said Gambians are proud of his work and his right to run as a president has been guaranteed by the Constitution. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, August 30th. In Liberia, the leader of the Alternative National Congress Party, which is one of the four parties that make up the opposition collaborating political parties, the CPP, says he will seek the candidacy of the opposition in Liberia's 2023 presidential election. Alexander Comis and former Vice President Joseph Boakai are so far the two unofficial leading candidates for the opposition. However, observers say unless the opposition puts its house in order, it will concede the presidency to President George Weah even before the 2023 election campaign begins. Mr. Comis tells me that there is no leadership crisis in the opposition.
Look, I wouldn't describe it as a crisis. We are in a competition. You know, this is a democracy. It's a young democracy, Liberia is. The CPP is a newly formed collaboration. We are competing for the leadership of the CPP. Some of our supporters, you know, get carried away, personalize, you know, the competition. But no, I would not say we have a crisis. We're just competing for the hearts and minds of the partisans of the CPP.
Some people say that you are bribing would-be delegates to the CPP convention to choose you as the standard bearer, and even going to the extent of paying media executives to write positive stories or to write stories about you. What do you make of these allegations?
It's political propaganda, JB, complete political propaganda. We don't know who the delegates are. We have not even agreed the process for delegate selection. So I don't know how you can be quote-unquote bribing delegates when we haven't even agreed the criteria yet for how delegates will be selected, how they'll vote, etc. You know, bribing media outlets, again, is all propaganda. What appears to be happening is that when people, whether it's the media individuals, are supporting me somehow is because, you know, we are paying them. And when they support others, it's because they're being patriotic. But it's all political. It's all propaganda. It is not true. And we are undeterred and will be undeterred. We will compete for the leadership of the CPP because it's in the interest of our country, I believe, to do so. And we will not let the propaganda affect our focus and our determination.
Talking about propaganda, I think some members in the coalition have said that Liberians would never vote for you because they say you are, quote, a Congo man. If these are true now, do they bother you, or do you think, again, this is just politics?
It's just politics. You know, this whole sort of, quote, unquote, Congo indigenous issue comes up always around elections. And so I'm not bothered by it. I don't think Liberians except for those who want to politically exploit that, think that way or talk about it. Liberians' dreams are focused on change. Liberians are struggling. Liberians live in a country that has wealth, but they are poor. Liberians want all the things everybody in the world wants: good education for their children, good health care, good infrastructure. And that's what I'm focused on. I believe that's what Liberians are focused on. And I think Liberians have moved beyond those artificial divisions.
Mr. Comis, the issue of corruption in Liberia, official corruption, continue to tear the country apart. This month, President George Weah suspended one Mrs. McKinnon Keita, Presidential Special Projects Coordinator, for allegedly soliciting $5 million from a group of South African investors. What's your comment about corruption in Liberia?
Corruption in Liberia, unfortunately, is endemic. It is everywhere, unfortunately, in our country. And whatever action the president took, again, I think it's superficial. Our approach to rooting out corruption is not systemic enough, it's not sustained. James, if he indeed took that action, that's a good thing. But this cannot be a one-off effort. The way you get rid of corruption is, as I mentioned, it has to be systematic. It's got to be sustained. You have the institutions that are supposed to root this out. You got to fund them. You got to make sure they got the right people, the right capability. You got to get out of the way. Let the facts lead where the facts lead. But just one-off arresting somebody or firing somebody, that's not a bad thing, but that's not going to get at the root cause. That's not going to solve the issue.
Before I let you go, Mr. Cummings, one criticism I hear about Liberian politicians is that sometimes they are blinded by self-interest. I know you have said you're interested in running for the candidacy of the CPP. Would you agree to be vice president if someone else wins the nomination?
The way I've answered that question is I'm in a collaboration. We have a process in place for determining who the standard bearer will be. James, you cannot go into a competition. And before you play the first game, you concede to losing the competition. If we follow the process we've agreed, and if I'm the one not to win it, we'll support the outcome of the process. Because it's more important for me that we replace President Weah, make him a one-term president. And I believe a CPP-led government would be much better than the current CDC government we have today.
Mr. Comis, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us.
Thanks, JB. We'll be in touch. All the best.
Alexander Cummings is the leader of the Alternative National Congress Party, which is part of the four-party opposition collaborating political parties of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Kenya is stepping up its COVID-19 vaccination campaign after receiving more doses by setting up vaccination centers in public spaces like malls, markets, and bus stops. Kenya's Ministry of Health says only 2% of the population has been vaccinated against the virus, partly because of traveling distance to get vaccinated. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi.
At a bus terminal in Nairobi, hundreds of people wait to get vaccinated. It's an exercise that has saved them long-distance travel to the designated vaccination centers. Walter Juma, a public bus conductor, is getting ready to receive his first COVID-19 jab. He says because of the demanding nature of his job, he could not find the time to go for vaccination at the health facilities. He says the vaccination is now near my place of work and home. This has helped a lot. There are other people who cannot walk for long, the elderly, and some are sick. Health officials say the number of people turning up for their vaccinations has doubled since more inoculation sites opened a month ago. Jacqueline Kerubu is a sub-county medical officer.
We've decided to come to the community because usually we give Monday to Friday in our public health facilities. But you find most people don't have time to come Monday to Friday. So we decided to come to the community so that we increase accessibility to the vaccine.
Kenya is receiving more vaccines doses from the U.S. government and other nations, so the supply is much better than during the first phase of the vaccination program. With its new vaccination strategy, Kenya's Vaccination Task Force Chairman Dr. Willis Akwale says they are hoping to vaccinate at least 10 million people by the end of the year.
We are now using about 800 centers, and we are going to gradually increase this to 3,000 centers by December. Increasing them means you are reaching people. You are opening vaccination center closer to where people are.
So far, 2.5 million people have received the first dose of the vaccine in Kenya. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the SACAFA regional qualifiers in Nairobi, where Uganda's representatives Lady Doves and Tanzania's Simba Queens were off to a flyer, winning their opening matches of the SACAFA regional qualifiers for the inaugural edition of the Total Energies CAF Women's Champions League. The Ugandan girls thrashed Djibouti's FADFC 5-0, while Simba of Tanzania defeated Burundi's PVP 4-1. And the first two matches of the two-week tournament staged at the Nairobi's Nyayo National Stadium. In the same competition, but this time around in Southern Africa, South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns and Zimbabwe's Black Rhino Queens are the first two teams to secure semifinal spots at the COSAFA qualifiers of the Total Energies CAF Women's Champions League 2021. Mamelodi Sundowns beat Double Action Ladies from Botswana in Durban on Saturday to top spot in Group A. Lesotho Defence Force and Mazini Wanderers played a 1-1 draw earlier in the day. In Group B, Black Rhinos Queens of Zimbabwe beat Tura Magic of Namibia 3-0. These gives Queens a full haul of 6 points in Group B and have ensured they will top the pool, while Magic and Green Buffaloes will fight it out for the second place when they meet on Tuesday. And onto basketball. The battle for quarterfinal slots for the 2021 FIBA AfroBasket Championships in Kigali is in its defining point on a day that Kenya registered their first team win on Sunday at AfroBasket in almost three decades. Two other teams advanced to the quarterfinals of the ongoing 16-nation tournament in Kigali, Rwanda. Cote d'Ivoire outlasted Nigeria 77-68 in Sunday's second game, and as a result, the Elephants won Group C with a 3-0 mark and secured the group's automatic ticket to the last eight. Nigeria, on the other hand, dropped to 2-1 to finish second and will take on Uganda on Tuesday in the qualification round to the quarterfinals. In Sunday's last game, Senegal closed their Group D campaign undefeated in three games after trouncing short-handed Cameroon 98-65. With the win, Senegal, who average a tournament high of 98.3 points per game and have defeated their three opponents, Cameroon, South Africa, and Uganda, by a winning margin of 33 points per game, qualified to the quarterfinals, while Cameroon registered their second straight on-court defeat and have been eliminated with a 0-3 record. In Monday's game, Egypt will face Angola, while Rwanda will face Guinea. And now to women's basketball news. FIBA Africa on Sunday awarded Guinea a wild card for the upcoming FIBA Women's AfroBasket 2021 following the withdrawal of Gabon. The biennial 12-nation tournament will take place from September 17th to the 26th at the Yaoundé Multisport Complex in Cameroon's capital city of Yaoundé. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, August 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a great week.
Stay informed and up to date Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC with VOA's International Edition. Our correspondents bring you the news from around the globe, plus we delve into the context of the day's biggest stories with interviews with experts that place the story into context to understand why it matters. VOA's International Edition, your best source for news and information.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation. Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.